Welcome to Bunta Vista. It's a special bonus episode. It's a special bonus episode with just me and Lucy. If you have been a long time listener of the podcast, you will know and you'll probably love the Theo and Ben only series, The Theo Files.
Yeah, I bet you love it. I bet you think it's so nice.
Oh, you get a slightly more intimate view into a friendship between two men that has existed for a long time. And they learn together and they share things with each other and everybody thinks it's really positive.
It's really interesting. They've got like a great rapport with each other. It's really positive. It's really nice.
Well, me and Lucy are here too. And you know what? Sometimes there are people around and they don't understand math that good, you know?
Yeah.
They don't really get the tenets of science.
They really like learning new things.
Some people like reality TV and pop country music.
Woo!
You know? Bad movies. Deliberately bad movies. It's in this spirit that we bring you the first installation in quite a while in Godfuckers, the unpleasant side of Punta Vista. The unpleasant
side.
For idiots.
Have we got a song?
I don't think we've ever had a song.
If
we do, it's from so long ago, I've forgotten it.
Mm.
I'm going to say we don't. I'll see what I can do. Not this week, though.
It's kind of a pun, right? Because a theophile would be someone who fucks God.
Yeah.
You know, just in case you hadn't. We have smart stuff on here, too. We know about words. Etymology.
Now, speaking of smart stuff, we're kind of cinephiles.
We're kind of cinephiles
around here. Should call it the Cinephiles.
We could. I'm sure there's no podcast with that name already in existence.
And given that we have for some reason been talking quite a bit about linemen lately, we've been talking about the humble Texas linemen, the bucket bunnies who won't stop trying to slob on their knobs, who won't stop aggressively sleeping with them every time they leave the safety of their family's porch.
Lineman wives, yep.
As brave soldiers getting out there risking life, limb and penis for your electricity, you know?
Yes.
And so we recently became aware of a 2015 film titled Life on the Line. And
Thinking about it, I'm already happy.
And we said, okay, we're going to have to watch this and figure out what's going on. It is a 2015 film starring John Travolta, John Travolta's wigs, John Travolta's facial hair prosthesis.
His kind of like Just for Men, like super black facial hair that doesn't really fit with the rest of his face.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Kate Bosworth.
Mm-hmm.
Devon Sawa from the movie Casper. I believe he played Casper.
He did play Casper.
There you go. And of course, one of Eleanor's very favorite movies, Final Destination.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't Final Destination.
And we got a couple of other people in there. Directed by
Julie Benz, looking Julie fine Benz. As hell.
Julie Benz, yep. So as soon as she popped up, I went, hello. So, directed by David Hackle, who appears to have directed a bunch of shit.
I didn't actually look up the director. What else has he got?
He was the production designer and second unit director on Saw 2, Saw 3, and Saw 4. And all right. Repo, the Genetic Opera, which I think was the sort of B-movie with Paris Hilton in it, I want to say.
Right, that checks out.
He was in talks to direct Saw 4, but then they said, no. He did end up directing Saw 5. I think that was his first solo directing credit. And then he has also directed a couple of like The Asylum grade kind of movies. It sounds like Into the Grizzly Maze.
All right.
AKA
this seems
Endangered.
Like his first serious feature.
Daughter of the Wolf from 2019. So, nothing that you kind of know about or really need to know about. Oh, yeah, Daughter of the Wolf is a 2019 Canadian action thriller starring Gina Carano.
Ooh. Ooh, okay.
The lady who is currently suing Disney to put her back on the Disney show.
Because of woke or whatever.
Because of woke.
Yeah, okay. All right, that checks out. That's movie had a lot of sort of patriot overtones, undertones, all tones.
Oh, very much, very much. So this is indeed a film about a crew of Texas linemen who are really kind of, if you think about it, the first responders on the front line of keeping your power on.
Were they Texas? I spent a long time trying to understand what accent everyone was doing because everyone's was also vastly different. John Travolta's not great, got to say.
No, everyone's kind of wandering around with it a little bit.
Yeah, kind of just wandering, meandering with it.
I got the feeling from the special effects that maybe they didn't have the money for, like, a dialect coach.
They obviously didn't have a lot of money. It's had a real straight-to-Netflix vibe to it. I'm not sure if it had a cinematic release, but I'm going to assume no.
No, I definitely found myself thinking, this movie looks like $100 at some point.
Yeah, it was like really poorly edited. The flashbacks were really, really like first-year film studies, kind of like there's a little fade in just so that you knew it was a flashback.
Well, and flashbacks happening in a way where it kind of makes you go like, wait, did we get out of the last flashback before we went into this one? Or are we kind of doing multi-layered stuff?
Very confusing. They had John Travolta really looking like the biker from I Think You Should Leave, which is something.
So, this movie begins. It opens with like a big a poem written on the screen. And John Travolta reads it out in character, and it's attributed to Bo Ginner, which is John Travolta's character in the movie, right?
Oh.
So the first seconds of this film were really confusing to me. Would it be okay with you if I read the poem for our listeners?
Can you please? Because the version that you uploaded had all French
titles. It was French text. Yes.
French text, so I was very confused for a lot of the time. Even the part that said, like, two jours to La Tempête. Yeah. What could it mean?
So we open with this poem on the screen. Life is a series of collected moments and experiences that we gather over the course of time. It's more about the quality of life than the height of the climb. We are more than 100,000 strong, but together we act as one. We walk the line, whether hurricanes, tornadoes, rain, wind, or sun. Our main mission is to protect the grid, even if one of us meets our maker. We are linemen. It is what we do, the credo we chant. You are your brother's keeper. Bo Ginner.
It's so fucking funny to, like, make out linemen like you're in Band of Brothers.
Yes.
Also, that line was repeated. He said, like, I think they said we're linemen. That's what we do, like, four times in the movie. And every time I said yes.
They say it so many times. Like, it cannot be overstated. Like, I've watched some really stupid, like, patriotic movies. Mark Wahlberg's Shooter. I'm thinking as well of, like, when I was doing a series with Riley from Trash Future, we watched, like, the Oliver Stone 9/11 movie with Nicolas Cage in it as a firefighter and stuff, you know? So, I've seen a bunch of this kind of stuff. It cannot be overstated how hard they are pushing for you to consider a Texas lineman to be the same as part, like,
of, like, a cop, any other first responder. Yeah.
A cop, an ambulance driver.
It was like a lineman recruitment movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a soldier.
Yeah. It was so much about, like, the myth of the lineman and how important he is.
It was very cool. And, like, so yeah, I was puzzled by the poem because it was very badly written in a way that made me think that must be real.
Mm.
Like, Like, if you actually asked a middle-aged man to write a poem about his work, you know?
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, so is Bo Ginnor, like, a real guy that this is based on?
Yeah, is he, like, a famous lineman or something?
No. So, he's not real. And also, this isn't, like, based on a true story or anything. So, they really did just make up a poem and attribute it to John Travolta's character and then put it on the screen and attribute it to a character in the movie.
I love it.
Like,
because he dies at the end. Let's get that straight up.
Let's get it out of the way.
He's, if you haven't seen the movie, you need to go and watch the movie before you listen to this. It's going to be really boring otherwise.
He's fixing God's power lines in heaven now. You know?
He is fixing God's power lines.
So, we go straight from that to, like, another weird framing device, which is Devon Sawa's character, and he's being interviewed by an unnamed person off the screen. Someone, I guess, who is, like, making a documentary or doing a news segment about linemen.
They do this, like, doco setup, and it lasts for, like, 2 seconds.
Yeah. They ask him one question, and then maybe halfway through the movie, they come back to it for another single question. I'm going to say, like well under, like, 2 minutes. I'm going to say that, like, they give it, like, 60 seconds of screen time.
Yeah.
And then they come back to it right at the very end. They leave so long between them that you go, he's what? Like, oh, yeah. What?
Yeah, I forgot about it. And then he's like, Bogey, the best damn man I ever know.
So, he's being interviewed, and they say, so, what's a lineman? And he goes, a lineman is somebody who fixes the...
I love that they answer that question so many times in the movie. It's like, in case you forgot, people are always like, so what does daddy do? Like, what's daddy's job?
Yeah, yeah. It's a real job, right? And the person off screen goes, no. I don't mean, like, the dictionary definition. I mean, what is a lineman to you? Yeah. Like, everybody has a deep personal definition, you know? So, like, they set up the whole start of the movie is what's giving you Travolta's tortured backstory. Because someone who it is revealed is his brother is, like, gonna go out in a storm to fix some lines. And this whole scene is like in Walk Hard, you know, the very start of the movie when the kids are going out and they're like, ain't nothing bad gonna happen today.
Yeah. Another day on the lines, boys. Woo!
Yeah, and his daughter's like, I don't want you to go out in the storm, Daddy. And he's like, hey, I've got to go out there and keep everybody's power on. It's what we do, he says.
It's what we do. We're
lying.
And then
he goes out to his wife, and she's like, ooh. And he's like, hey, it's what we do.
It's what we do, you know? Babe.
And they're setting it up so hard as, like, he's right about to walk out into the storm and get into his truck, and his wife, and he says to his wife, baby, little pause, and she goes, I love you too. Like, every time he leaves to go to work, they have to do the, like,
yeah,
the,
if it's you like die you not today. Come back. Yeah, so you know how serious the job is.
I think also, like, they make a real point of everybody in the movie who is a lineman has to be wearing the shirt from their workplace at all times.
Yeah, with their little name on it, like, all the time.
It's got the badge with the patch with the electricity company's name and the character's name embroidered on it too, just so that, like, I guess they went, oh, like, a cop would be wearing a uniform.
Yeah.
So you know he's a cop. He's
wearing his lineman uniform when he goes to the diner so that you know he's a lineman.
Yeah. This guy in his home is wearing it. Everybody's wearing it so other people can go, he's a lineman. So they make a really big deal, I think, through both the uniform and stressing over and over that you may well die every fucking time you go to work. They're just working so hard to get you to go, wow, this is the most noble job in the world.
I think they actually mentioned at one point that it's the fourth most dangerous job in America.
They do describe it.
Mm-hmm.
You reckon that's true?
That's probably true, right? They wouldn't lie in a movie. It's surely a pretty dangerous
job.
Not
about linemen. They wouldn't.
They take that shit seriously.
Oh, so this is for 2024. Let's have a look here. 10 most dangerous jobs. Number one, logging workers.
Okay.
43 fatal injuries in 2021. 82 fatal injuries per 100,000 full-time workers. Average salary, $47,000.
Jesus.
That's not enough money to be the most physically risky thing in the country. Number two, fishing and hunting workers.
Oh, I guess that's dangerous because you might shoot yourself.
Fishing and hunting workers are responsible for trapping and catching a wide variety of land animals or fish. Oh, because fishing and hunting workers routinely travel to remote areas to find wildlife, transportation-related accidents are a leading cause of injuries and fatalities.
Oh, so they're just dying on the road.
Number three, roofers.
Okay, because you fall off the roof. You
fall off the roof, yep. Yeah. Number four, aircraft pilots and flight engineers. Number five, structural iron and steel workers. Number six, delivery and truck drivers. Refuse and recyclable material collectors.
Have you even seen linemen on there?
Number 10, electrical power line installers and repairers. You've fallen, boys.
I could be lying. I'm pretty sure in the movie they said false.
Oh, they do. Like, they do. The movie's from 2015.
All right.
And these stats are from, well, the article's from 2024, but all the stats that they're citing are from 2021.
Oh.
So we've at least got 6 years between the movie and the stats they're pulling from, where it's fallen from fourth to tenth.
I am actually seeing a website, Lineman Central, that says it's the third most dangerous job in the US behind loggers and manual agriculture workers.
Yeah, but they love telling people that shit.
I bet they love it. They feel dangerous. They feel sexy.
But, like, you can't just keep adding groups to, like, people that you have to salute and consider first responders, right?
Yeah, they really seem to want to add linemen to the list, though.
They do. And we'll get to the funniest part of that at the end. So he goes out in the wind and the rain to fix his power line. His brother John Travolta shows up, absolutely insane wig and beard,
mental.
Now I can't tell if it's because of the period in his life that we're seeing, or if it's because of the wind and rain. But his long goatee has like a hair tie in it.
It does. John Travolta's so, it's just strange looking. Like, every time you see him, he just looks fucking weird.
He's got a very wide face, doesn't he?
He's like, got a really odd face, and he just the older he gets, the weirder he looks.
Yeah, and, like, I have no idea if he's, like, had a bunch of work done or anything, you know.
Maybe.
But he doesn't look super worked on. Like, if you look at him when he's young, he's got, like, a very sort of, he's got, I guess, a bit of that very all-American, like, a bit of Clark Kent face in the 70s, you know, like, real lantern-jawed, the black forelock of hair, you know. But, yeah, as he sort of got older and older, it's like his face is just sort of, his head's gone more square.
It's more square. I feel like he's had a tiny bit of work done, but just like a tiny bit. He hasn't gone like Mickey Rourke about it.
No. And you don't want to go full Mickey Rourke.
No, you never want to go full Rourke.
That's a bad time for everyone. So, you know, they're trying to fix this lineup. John Travolta as Bo Ginner, he's being a bit cavalier with it, and his brother gets a bit huffy. And he goes, "I'll fix it," and goes up the line. Zap!
He gets so exploded.
He gets blasted with digital lightning that comes down the wire. Very noticeably poor and cheap digital effects on the fire on him as he falls off the line, and the really smoke that comes up.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we established at the start of the movie, before he went out, he did have a young daughter. And I know you're thinking to yourself, that's okay. His wife will look after their daughter.
Mm.
Unfortunately, she's speeding in the rain.
Crying. Hysterical.
Gotta get to my husband.
Worried about John Travolta.
my cooked husband. And she gets completely fucking annihilated by a truck, helpfully right in front of John Travolta, so he knows it's happened.
Yeah. He just sees his wife and daughter get fucking cleaned up, right? Or is it just the wife?
No, it's his brother's wife. Leaving the niece orphaned at home, which means...
Oh, right. The niece is orphaned. Gotcha.
Uncle mode is activated. So we then... I guess we learned that that was a flashback or happening in the past. We then come to the present, what I understand to be the present, and we can tell things have changed because his goatee is now a normal length.
It's normal. He's serious about safety on the site. He's
so fucking serious about safety because of his traumas.
He
hates
guys who cut corners because he cut corners.
Cut a corner and now his brother's dead and he's got to fucking live with it.
He's got to raise a niece. He's got to raise a child now.
He's got to raise a niece. Who is like
30 but keeps saying she's going to go to college.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who was really confused about this.
I was like, is she meant to be 30? Because like she is.
I feel like the only way that they address this, right? So he's living with his niece. I had to like look up the characters and stuff to figure out is she meant to be his wife, who we haven't met yet?
Yeah, and, I straight up thought it was the wife. And the niece is like a teenager
and we're waiting for her to get up because he's talking about college applications and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But after a bit, it becomes apparent he's talking to Kate Bosworth, who, while being, I'm going to say, 15 or 20 years younger than John Travolta, is also, like, she's in her mid-30s at the time of filming.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how fucking long is supposed to have passed since this 8-year-old had her dad get killed, and now we've got this lady?
She's meant to be younger. But I totally assumed it was just his younger wife at the start of the movie.
Me too. And so it got real confusing, particularly, because they keep saying, she's going to go to college. She's going to go to college, as though she's just finished school or something. She's working as a waitress. I feel like there's maybe one reference in the movie later on where her erstwhile boyfriend, Devon Sawa, says, like, is that why you've sort of waited around instead of going to college, or why it's taken you so long to go to college, or something like that.
Yeah.
He makes some kind of reference to her sort of waiting to go to college, you know?
So but Devin's, yeah, I like, was like it, her boyfriend, but she doesn't really want to commit or something. They're kind of like half together. Don't totally understand what the vibe is there.
It is confusing.
Like, there's so many different little character plot lines in this movie, you know, like it's intricate.
Well, yeah, because at this point they go outside and they see the neighbors moving in across the street. We've got Julie Benz looking fire. Julie Benz MILF. Is married to a guy who looks really suspicious and weaselly.
Yeah, like straight up, like the second you meet him.
He also seems to have taken like an instant dislike to Travolta's Beau Ginner. He's looking at him with great suspicion, even though Travolta sees him and he's like, you're a lineman too. You work at the power company too, huh? And he's like, yeah, I guess.
But he's suspicious because his wife's a tramp, you know?
Well, yeah, but we don't know that at this point in the movie.
We don't know that yet.
Is this what? Like, I wondered if he was meant to be a worker for a rival company,
like a rival lineman company.
Yeah, because he's looking at Travolta with like so much suspicion and dislike at the very beginning here, and I was like,
he's got PTSD from army.
He does. She's like, here's my husband. He's back from the wars.
It's not good enough to just be a lineman. You've also got to be a vet.
Who's literally a veteran lineman with PTSD. And like, he has a bit of a think about this, right? Wait a minute. How do we get to, there's a flashback because it's his birthday, but this is what's really confusing to me, right? I'm going to say, under 20 minutes into the movie, And we are already being shown the third different time it's Travolta's birthday.
Yeah.
In the opening scene where his brother gets killed, he turns up late and looking maybe like he's a few drinks in because birthday.
Because it's his birthday. He says, hey, it's my birthday.
Let's celebrate. And he's like, why don't we celebrate by fixing the fucking line, you know?
Yeah.
And he gets zapped and he dies. And then flash forward, present day, it's also his birthday.
But his niece has made him a cupcake. He just wants the cupcake.
And he's like, oh, I fucking hate birthdays because of that stuff you guys just saw, you know?
Yeah, because of my trauma.
Yeah, and then she gives him a present. She throws him a little surprise party at his work, and she gives him a present, and it's like a biker badge or patch or something.
Something kind of biker related.
And he gets triggered into having a flashback, and in the flashback, he's a biker, and he's got a really long, like, braided goatee.
It's so fucking funny. He looks so stupid. And a big, long
ponytail, and he looks absolutely so ridiculous. Dumb. And it's him turning up to his brother's place and saying, hey, I know I'm a crusty, irresponsible biker, but I think I want to change. I want a normal job. Mm. I want a steady job like you.
I'm sick of the biker life.
And he's like, I don't know if you've really got what it takes to be a lineman. And he says, hey, you got to take me on, bro. It's my birthday. It can't be a fucking birthday every day in every memory, you know?
You only remember your birthdays.
Three birthday scenes under 15 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, I'm going to call. You're right.
Is it always your birthday? I think around this point, we get introduced to Devon Sawa's character. Also confusing in that he is Kate Bosworth's boyfriend.
Half boyfriend.
On again, off again, let's say.
On again, off again, boyfriend.
They're shitty to each other for some reason. There's the rumor mill is saying that they've broken up. But like, he is also portrayed as kind of, I feel like he's sort of portrayed as like, maybe a bit of a ne'er-do-well. He's a bit of a wrong side of the tracks kind of guy.
Yeah.
There's a suggestion that Bo doesn't like his family. Family his are drunks and alcoholic. Stuff.
Yeah.
And that he sort of reveals, even though, you know, they've been a bit distant, that he's finally got himself a job. Things are looking up for him. And I'm like, how fucking old is he meant to be?
Yeah, that guy's like 45.
I looked it up.
How old was Devon Sawa during this? He's got to be old.
I think, to me, the movie is written as though they are both in their early to mid-20s, right?
Yeah.
But so like, 30. She's hung 40. Around. Yeah, she's like, hung around a few years longer than she was supposed to before she went to college. He's from a bit of a rough family and he's had trouble like holding down work and stuff like that, but he's trying to get it together, you know? That to me, they're written very much as like early to mid-20s characters. Mm. She was 32 and he was 37 when they shot the movie.
That checks out. That's 100% how old both of them look.
Yes. Devon Sawa looks like a 40-year-old man, you know? And yet, the characters are very much written like,
yeah,
like they're teen lovers, you know.
Yeah,
it's real fucking weird.
Everybody's got trauma in this movie. His mum has trauma because his dad died from being a lineman, and he does a whole speech about like my daddy was a lineman and I'm a lineman. And
she's like, you can't be a lineman. Your daddy died going up the line.
Yeah, and she slaps him and gets back on the drink.
How long did it take you to figure out who the actress was playing his mother?
I had to Google it because I was like, she looks really familiar. Sharon Stone.
Fucking Sharon Stone.
Crazy.
And I feel like Sharon Stone is too good for a movie like this.
Yeah.
I don't really know how that happened.
Shitty role. It wasn't, there was nothing. Give us nothing, girl.
Oh. And like, I don't know. It's the kind of thing where you sort of look at it and you go, hey, I bet if this was a good movie with a good director, Sharon Stone would be giving us something good.
Yeah.
But instead, it's this.
What do you think of it overall? What stars are you giving it?
Whole movie?
Yeah.
Like out of five?
Out of five.
I'm landing like between a 2 and a 3.
Yeah, I'm thinking 2.5 because I actually really enjoyed myself. It was so bad. It was funny. Like I was having a good time.
Tight 90 minutes. You know.
Yeah, can't complain. 1 hour 33.
Like, obviously stupid stuff about it, but competently made enough that it wasn't like a total slog. Not a lot of intentional humor in the movie, I'm going to say.
No, but there was some humor.
It is wild, though, seeing a movie like this with fucking, John Travolta and Sharon Stone in it just on this incredibly cheap film.
Absolutely.
I spent a while wondering if her hair was a wig.
Yeah, it definitely was, right?
So Devon Sawa's got a job as an apprentice lineman at the young age of 37. Finally having a crack at having a job.
He's got it together.
Well, and so they're doing all the... He's getting trained, and it's like fucking boot camp. And they're giving everybody...
Oh, my God, it is. They're giving everybody shit.
Lectures about safety. It's big on safety. And Travolta says at some point, his character says, he's like, this was one of those ones that made me go... they're showing pictures of someone who's been like fucking cooked by electricity,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I can't remember if he's like referring to this person specifically, but Travolta's like, yeah, I knew this guy who was like, he was good and all this sort of stuff, and he thought he knew it all, so he got a little bit sloppy, you know, even though he aced all his tests. He says he was top 10 in his class. Like, it's fucking Top Gun.
Yeah.
Like, it's in Harvard.
In school.
And there's like 10 guys in the room that he's giving these safety briefings to.
Yeah. How big are these classes?
What are you talking about?
Is he talking about himself?
We're at lineman school right now. It's the fourth most dangerous job in the US, we get told again. God damn. It's so funny how fucking everyone in town is just like part like either is a lineman or is directly impacted
related,
by the people around and them
yeah,
being
like,
linemen.
At one point, the women are like, you know, we're lineman wives. You know, it's hard being a lineman wife.
God damn, it's so good. But yeah, it took me a while to figure out that his drunk mum was Sharon Stone.
Me too.
Your daddy was a lineman. Got himself killed. So you know, the training's happening, they're learning how to do stuff. A power line falls over and nearly kills Bo because they really need to stress that every lineman is almost getting killed every day.
Constantly, every no matter single what. Day.
But he's like, Devon Sawa, you bitch. Mm. I'm so guilty of my brother's death.
Hates Devon Sawa. Mad at Devon Sawa the whole movie.
I fucking hate your face.
I hate this guy.
So then we get to, all of a sudden, it's revealed that, like, storms are coming. 3 days until the storm.
La Tempête, or whatever it said.
Yeah. And we're getting a lot of, like, at this point, we've had a whole lot of Bo saying, like, everybody loves me because I'm safe and I do things the right way and
I
care
Mr.
about my
safety.
Alignment. And the bosses at his work are like, that's so cool, Bo. What if you didn't worry about safety as much?
Yeah. We don't really care about it. What if you just loosened up?
What if you did it faster?
Yeah, because we don't care about safety. We just need these lines up. Like, they're doing some line improvement program. And they're like, you're behind on the project.
I like how the control room for
the
electricity stuff looks like fucking NASA.
It looks like NASA. And there's this guy just standing around the TV all day long. Like,
they're doing
it
like
line 12 back up.
Yeah. It's like, have you ever seen like the taking of Pelham 1, 2, 3?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's like sleeves rolled up, hands on hips, looking at all the lines.
Oh, God damn it. Line 7's down.
Oh, got to get someone out there. And there's a lot of scenes of, like, Travolta going, well, they want us at line 10, but also we're at line 12, and they want us to be at line 9 now. It's so unreasonable. Yeah. They're so in the pocket of big linemen. They really want you to feel sympathetic to how...
They don't care about safety and doing things the right way.
I don't care if you get zapped. So there's a point where we see the new neighbor, and he's like just looking out at his kids playing, and then like they just start fading in this audio of like gunfire and people going, Sarge, we gotta get out of here. Everybody's gonna kill Sarge.
And then his wife's trying to have sex with him, but he's like, he's hearing the gunfire.
Trying to suck you off, babe.
And then he like physically grabs her, but not in an abusive enough way that you hate him, you know?
No, I really couldn't tell for a chunk of this how suspicious lineman with PTSD like factors into the plot, you know?
Yeah.
So we find out that the niece is pregnant, to Devon Sawa, and also that that sexy neighbor lady is probably sleeping around. Hey.
Oh, yeah. She's a harlot.
If your husband didn't want you to fuck other people, maybe he shouldn't have got his ass deployed overseas. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should have thought of that before he went.
He should have.
Halfway through the movie, we are back to TV interview and straight out of it again. But PTSD lineman goes out during the storm and he's like, babe, goodbye.
Yeah, I love you. Goodbye.
And he climbs up a big power line tower. And I was like, yes, yes, yes. Suicide by line work. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought he was doing. Was that the idea?
Yeah. Kill himself goes up there.
By line work.
Yeah, he goes up there. He doesn't. All the guys, very concerned with safety, are screaming out, tie yourself off. But he doesn't, and he stands there, closes his eyes, holds his arms out wide like he's about to fucking torpedo his ass off there. And I was like, oh, this makes sense for his character because he thinks his wife's fucking other dudes, which it certainly seems like she is.
Like it seems like she probably is, and, you know, he's got PTSD, he's got trauma.
Dick don't work no good anymore.
Dick don't work no good because of the trauma.
His kids, like, kind of don't understand what he does. What does daddy do? What does that mean, being a lineman? You know?
Yeah. It's like your mum doesn't even work. You can't even understand your dad's job. He's out on the lines every day.
She looked like she should be a real estate agent or a weather woman.
Yes, she did. She was very glam. Very glam for the position in life. Just hanging out like lineman's wife. She was super glam.
That and drinking.
Oh, yeah. She loved drinking.
Drinking with Kate Bosworth, who doesn't have any booze, which causes her to immediately intuit that she is pregnant.
That's women's intuition.
And it's the one reason that a woman won't drink.
Yeah.
Canonically.
Canonically. It's because she's pregnant.
Sorted. So, like, yeah, we think this guy's going to kill himself. They don't show him actually going off, but I'm like 100% lock. That dude went up there, made a big deal out of it. He's totally going to be killing himself.
Blasted himself, yeah.
There's a character we totally forgot about in here. And that is Kate Bosworth's...
stalker?
Creepy stalker ex. Fresh out of prison.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of hanging out and he's making trouble for her and he's being pushy and sexually aggressive. And again, just it's
stalking
like...
stalking her, threatening her.
And again, it's kind of like, with the tone of the rest of the movie... I don't quite get what this guy's doing here, you know?
He's just furthering the plot, I suppose.
Yeah, and also, it's same for the lineman with PTSD where I was like, what's this guy's going?
Oh, yeah, what? But it all culminates in the end.
Oh, we get a real M. Night Shyamalan, everything's clicking into place moment towards
really
the end.
It really did.
We've got the big storm happening, right? The big storm of the century. And while this is happening, some power grids go out and lots of everybody's power goes out everywhere.
That's panicking.
That's the perfect condition for a creepy stalker to come in and try to rape somebody.
Exactly. You know? And he tries to get Julie Benz because she was rude to him at the bar.
She was like, stop being so rapey, you know?
He was like, I'll show you.
So the PTSD husband just pulls up in the car. I guess he decided to climb his ass down from the tower.
Just decided to go home, yeah.
He comes home and I'm like, oh, I guess while he was up there, you know, he remembered his wife's voice. He must have thought of how much he loved her. But actually, he was thinking, I'm going to come home and fucking kill my wife and the person that she's cheating on me with.
I'm assuming he was just going to kill the guy that she was with, right?
Well, maybe. Because he pulls up. There's another car out the front. Creepy guy's
and
car.
And he pulls his gun out.
Gets He's his, got gun his gun out.
Ready.
And then he also remembers dialogue from earlier in the film, which is very helpful for us, the audience. So he busts in, finds this guy on top of his wife. I think he realizes that this is not consensual.
He's a bad guy. Yeah.
What's happening? Kate Bosworth has come in too. She's doing a little investigating. They wrestle for the gun. Stalker gets shot. Pregnant woman also gets shot in the tummy.
In the tummy. That's where the baby is.
Yep. It's my understanding. Not good for the baby. You know? This, of course, leads to the ultimate stakes in the movie, which is that Bo and Devon Sawa both find out while they're out on the job that their beautiful niece / girlfriend has been injured. And Bo's like, I need you to be strong. I need you to be strong when you hear this.
Is her name Bailey? Something like that?
Bailey.
Say that.
Bailey Ginner. Bailey Ginner's going to have my baby.
You got to be strong. You got to be strong when I
gotta
tell you.
Got to be strong. She's hurt. Our baby girl's hurt.
We got to get that power back on.
Because she's
in the hospital and there's no power.
She's in the fucking hospital. She's in the emergency room. And I'm not kidding when I say the doctors keep saying, I can't see. I can't see.
I can't see anything. They've got torches out. I got to say, I'm becoming more pro this film the more we talk about it. Because I was like, when I was watching that, I was like, oh my God. Oh.
It is really important that they get the power back on.
You got to save it.
It's so cool. So the entire plot then becomes, we have to get the power back on to save our family member's life.
And then the culmination of everything is so good.
Bo gets up there. He's trying to fix it and he realizes the only way he can fix it is by sacrificing himself like lineman Jesus.
Yeah, he is like lineman Jesus, and he throws himself on that piece of metal and then goes absolutely blasting through the air in a way that is so funny, like just insanely funny. He just gets absolutely blasted.
Imagine how bad his burnt wig smelled. So Bailey Ginner is saved. The baby is saved, as we find out in a future flash forward. And they're all standing around her, Devon Sawa, their baby. 2 years have passed, we are told, in French. And they're all standing around what I thought was going to be Bo's grave. But they are, in fact, all standing around a memorial to fallen linemen.
Yeah. Yeah, they are.
This memorial is dedicated to all fallen linemen. And then at the very end, the film directs us to fallenlineman.org.
Oh, it does too. It really does.
That website is still up. It does seem that they stopped updating it the year after this film. So, they got to 2016 Fallen Linemen, and then they said, that'll do, you know?
And there was a song for the movie. They played a song called Life on the Line. It's really bad.
Oh, I heard some of the country in this, and I was like, yep. Oh, my God. I'm looking at the Fallen Linemen organization. Fallenlineman.org, they do have a store. And you can buy, oh my God.
Is there lineman merch?
Oh, there's, well, it's not just lineman merch. It's fallen lineman merch. Oh, I'm going to have to buy this hat.
What does it say? What do you got?
Okay. I'm going to send you the picture of this, and I want you to describe it for our beautiful listeners. Right. I straight up think I am actually going to buy this hat.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's so fucking good. It's like a guy kneeling down to pray at like a crucifix, like a cross, but it's the power lines.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That's so fucking good.
Oh, it's reduced to $8. Sold out. Fuck. Oh, the black one. I've still got the black one. Oh, but it's not as good. It's not as good. I like it in khaki better.
Yeah, it's way better. Anyway, I got to say, I loved Life on the Line. I really enjoyed myself. It was one of the stupidest movies I've ever seen.
Oh, sometimes you got to watch like a bad movie on purpose. And while you do it, you're like 15 minutes in and you're like, this is going to be a fucking chore. You know?
Yeah, like it's just boring.
Yeah, yeah. There's things I've watched for podcasts and stuff before, you know, where it's just like, damn, this is a whole bunch of work right now.
Yeah.
You know? But this, that's good stuff.
Mm.
That's good gear. Like I said, they kept it real. Sorry. I'm now seeing the line ladies category of merch.
Are there line ladies? There's got to be line ladies, right?
Oh, fuck.
Or is this still a male-dominated job? Can you be a line woman?
I don't know. I mean, you'd hope so.
Surely we're equal opportunity on this, but it seems quite physically demanding.
Well, like, we're getting there in Australia. I don't know if you have also noticed that nowadays when you drive past some road work, you drive past some...
There's a lot more women tradies, yeah.
A lot more young workers, women.
100%, yeah.
Bloody good on them.
Get them up on the lines.
This is a women's V-neck shirt, and it says in a large print on the back, "You are the hook to my gaff, buckle to my belt, gloves to my hand, cross arm to my pole, love of my life."
Wow. Sweet as sugar, hard as ice, that's the lady in a lineman's wife. Oh, this is great. I'm going to get me one of those.
Oh, fuck. I legit think I'm going to have to buy like a fallen lineman shirt.
I actually think you should. That's really sick.
Oh, no. All the extra larges are sold out.
Damn.
What?
Fuck, that's good.
Like a big eagle on the back. Oh, that's so cool.
Should we take some questions?
I'd love to take some questions. We got some questions, my beautiful stinky listeners. Now, look, the first one is related to the film. First one comes to us from Lockie, who says, "Hello, lovely hosts and or hateful godfuckers. In honor of this episode's star, John Travolta, I have to ask, smash or pass on John Travolta from the movie Hairspray? Is he giving or is it gone? Attached is an image, if for some reason you have forgotten, 2007 smash hit movie musical Hairspray. Thank you for wading into the questions that other podcasts are afraid to ask. Cheers, Lockie." I have put a picture in there for you, Lucy.
Like, I think I remember. Like, it's not going to be a smash from me, but, like, he is giving. Like, it's cunt.
My, like... I'm going to say pass because it's a joke to him.
You're right. He's not taking it seriously enough.
Yeah. Like it really had the sort of, it really had that kind of stink of stunt casting at the time. Right. It was that real like, oh, look at this person doing something unexpected kind of thing. As opposed to, you know, there are some people that you see in their, some people you see in their, like, movie drag or whatever, and they're just, like, all the way gone in it.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a clip that I hadn't seen before. It was a few clips in the last day or two of Walton Goggins' character in Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I forgot he was in Sons of Anarchy. Oh, wow. That's just come flooding back.
And he's like a busty trans sex worker.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Walton Goggins puts his whole pussy in everything.
Oh, yeah. He's got his whole pussy in doing that.
Yeah.
Love Walton Goggins.
And it's like, you know, even if that's not your bag, you would have a great time with her that night, you know? Whereas John Travolta, it's just like he'd be like elbowing you and winking the whole time. You know?
Like I'm in a lady's dress.
Next one comes to us from Anders. My wife has been part of a Facebook group about these books. Your kind of books, Lucy.
Well, book talk. Don't call them my kind of books.
Just because you bought them up in the
last
episode.
I'm not reading them.
My wife's been a part of a Facebook group about these books and shares the most unhinged ones that she encounters.
Great.
I don't have much to add here other than a few increasingly bizarre ones. Sadly, I can't find the screenshot of the croissant fucking book, as in the croissant becomes an anthropomorphic endowed embodiment of a croissant, not just fucking yourself with patisserie. Hope this makes or ruins your day. It is Godfathers after all. Okay, so this is, you know on Facebook where somebody will like post a question in a group and then it turns the question into like a graphic?
Yeah.
And sometimes they're the really funny ones that are like, your grandmother died.
Yeah.
Little celebration of love hearts and stuff. This is in the Facebook group. The Smuthood. Any spicy Stockholm syndrome recommendations? Thanks. I should note that that all of the O's in Stockholm syndrome have been replaced with ats.
Okay.
Just to kind of mix it up. Maybe you're not meant to be.
Maybe you're not allowed to say that or something. Maybe it's not allowed in the group.
Which, you know, that has a tone. That certainly has a...
Oh, there's 100% books like that. There's heaps of them. Heaps of them.
Here's another one. I found out I was pregnant a few weeks ago and need all the milking recs. Preferably with two men.
Oh, my goodness. Women like are perverted in ways that you can't imagine, you know?
Yeah, and like, to be honest, I kind of found a sort of comfort in this because, you know, like if you go and look at just the front page of Pornhub or whatever, you go, oh, men are the devil.
Yeah.
Men are just big,
men are
sicko,
disgusting.
Big
sick.
Sicko demons.
Perverts.
Disgusting, horny wants, you know? Yeah. And then you see some of this stuff and you and like... Part of me sort of goes, like, reading a book is worse.
I feel like it is. I don't need to judge, but, like, I just can't. Like, my best friend reads these books and she'll try to tell me about them. It's like, oh, you know, this one. Or there just wasn't enough, like, backstory. Like, his backstory just didn't make sense. And it's like all these books are culminating in, like, just a few sex scenes. But it's like you need the entire novel beforehand to, like, believe it, you know?
But this is like, you know, if my beautiful wife ever watches porno, she's got to have, like, all the story on the front and the back. She's like, I need to know how they got here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, for real. She's like, I need context before I can watch these two people fucking each other, you know?
I'm happy with the context just being, like, football player, you know? Like, that's enough context for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Title, done, you know?
NRL player, got it.
Yeah.
yeah, like, yeah, there's something, like, I guess at least, like, going to a website and going, I'm watching a video where some people are fucking, there's like at the very least a kind of immediacy to that of like horny now, jack off now kind of thing. Whereas to me, like making your way through dozens of these books is kind of unhinged.
That's just so much work. Like it's hard enough to focus on a book.
Well,
maybe that's because I'm reading serious books. Maybe that's just because I'm reading Blood Meridian, you know? Maybe these are easier to get through.
We were talking to a friend the other night, and I think Eleanor recommended a book, and she was like, oh, yeah, maybe I'm, you know, I kind of just started a book, but I'm forever kind of starting a book and, you know, and then I put it down and forget about it kind of thing. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's been my experience of books for the last however many years is I pick up a book and I'm really interested in the first chapter and I'm like, maybe this will be the book I read.
Yeah. Yeah, that's me ever since I got a phone, you know.
Problems with phones. Recommendations where the MMC, male main character, is able to give himself a blowjob.
All right. Okay.
Tom Walker doing a little more reading these days. Yeah.
You can also find that on Pornhub if you're interested.
Yep. You could just see someone doing it.
You can just see it. You don't have to imagine it with words.
I just finished this one. It caught my curiosity, and I'd never considered this kink. Lol. This is so sweet and spicy. Definitely recommend this short story. Can I just share the cover with you here, Lucy, if you'd like? You can let the listeners know what the cover of this particular book is all about.
What have we got here? Oh! I can tell you it's got a teddy bear on it. It's called Teddy. And it says a paranormal teddy bear, stuffed animal, romance.
If you're sitting down to read a book.
I feel so normal. I feel so normal right now.
Making you feel well adjusted.
Everything I like is so normal compared to that one.
Sitting down to read my book about a lady fucking a possessed teddy.
You're getting that on the Kindle, I assume. Like, you're not opening that in a paperback on the tram.
No, I don't think so. And maybe that's like, I don't know. Is that people are posting these under their real fucking names?
Yeah, that's fucking mental.
Here's another one from the Smuthood, posted by Carmella Barta. Thank you, Carmella. Putting you on blast. Called Cold Sweat. So, why are we talking about this new Vera book? It was hysterical and hot. And yes, it was about a sentient Kool-Aid pitcher. It's a quick read, and I don't regret reading it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's really something.
What's going on?
You know what? The teddy one's way more normal than that. I'm getting on board with teddy.
Yeah. Well, what's weird about this is that, I assume at some point you have heard the expression or like the idea of Rule 34.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That if it exists, yeah, really somebody has made porno out of it, right?
Yeah. Well, ladies are making literotica out of it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Because, like, I think, yeah, like a lot
maybe
of stuff.
Men. And this feels like a woman's domain.
Yeah, I know we're being very gendered about it, but also I'm yet to see evidence to the contrary. I guess.
Yeah, fellas, you know? If you're reading fucked up books,
fellas, are you reading not just like books with sex in them?
Yeah.
But I guess specifically, like...
I know there's a lot of those, like, gay romance, like, gay cowboy stuff. You know, what's his name? Chuck, what's his name that makes all the gay romance novels? That exist, but...
Funny titles and everything, yeah.
Yeah. Women have taken this to a different place.
And I consider the gay ones, like, the same thing in terms of, like, yeah, this is just a... Like, I'd love to know more about it in the sense of, like... How many pages long are these books? Like,
well, the ones I've seen, like, they're full novels. Like, I'm assuming the Kool-Aid story is like more of a short story type thing, but these are full on novels, which would take me a long time to read personally.
You would have to think some of the Kindle ones you're getting would be like the length of a Babysitter's Club book, right?
Yeah, surely. Surely they're not too long. Because you're waiting for the sex scene, I assume.
Just kind of trying to blast through there.
Yeah.
All right, just a bit more backstory and then let's get to it.
You know? This feels very retro, you know, like watching a movie that's got a sex scene in it when you're a teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you couldn't just like watch pornography, you know.
You're watching SBS movies.
You're watching erotic tales on SBS late at night.
Yeah.
Waiting for some French lesbians or something.
Yeah, you're watching a French movie and it's kind of boring, but also you get the feeling that something might happen.
I think these ladies like each other a little bit more than friends.
Man, I used to get a lot of mileage out of something that might happen.
Yeah. Maybe that's what these are like, these books.
Remember yearning? Remember?
Not anymore. You don't have to yearn because everything's available online.
Everything's available. Also, we're both firmly shackled to long-term partners.
The old ball and chain.
The old ball and chain, you know? Yeah, look, if there are any straight fellas out there reading these bad boys, write into mailbag@muntavista.com. Confess.
Yeah.
Confess your sins, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Hey there, godfuckers. I'm including one silly one and one serious-ish one. Feel free to pretend like I only sent in the one you choose to answer. Well, the joke's on you, Alexandra. We're going to answer both of them. I didn't want to choose. This comes to us from Alexandra. Bylines in Slate, the New York Times. I'm serious, by the way. Why do you fucking people listen to this stuff? Why are people reading the Kool-Aid books, you know?
Yeah. Stupid. Freaks.
So, here's the first one. I've 24, female, converted my boyfriend, 23, non-binary, into a casual Punta Vista listener, but the other day they told me they sometimes stop listening to an episode because, quote, sometimes the jokes are just like, ha ha, poop, fart, ha ha, poop. And?
Yes, and?
Is the relationship salvageable or is this a case of the under 25 rule? What's the under 25 rule?
I don't know.
But oh, you said like you knew and were pondering it.
No, I don't know. Oh, is it because of their ages?
It seems to be a lot of driver licenses rules related.
No, I think this is our rule, right, from relationships where if you're under a certain age, that
just get
to,
out.
The answer is just dump them, you know, get out while you still can.
Yeah, all the other search results are about Leonardo DiCaprio.
You know, no, it's probably still salvageable, you know?
Oh, yeah,
sometimes
fine.
You're going to have better taste than your partner in
that's
things.
That's right. That's
sometimes
right.
Sometimes you're just kind of smarter than them, like more cultured, more interesting, sexier, and that's just the way that the relationship goes, and that's okay.
Maybe with maturity, your partner will grow and learn about the world around them and finally get what's funny.
Exactly.
Like Dookie's
my partner listens to Neutral Milk Hotel sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can kind of get past these things as a couple if you just kind of accept your differences.
I know we're not supposed to give serious answers, but I do wonder, and this isn't directed at the person writing the letter, right? To be clear. but like, yeah, I wonder how many people like stiff themselves out of potentially fruitful relationships just because like all of their tastes don't exactly align in the first instance, you know?
Yeah.
Like I don't think somebody not liking the same like media as you is like a relationship red flag. I think not liking any of the same things is a big red flag.
I think not being open to like trying to engage with what your partner likes, that's bad.
Yeah, no, I'd definitely go with that. But I think like but I think like really you would kind of hope that in most like healthy relationships that it wasn't like one person thinking the other person was cool and that not being reciprocated. Like ideally in a healthy relationship, you both want to think there's cool stuff about each other, right?
Yeah.
And there's going to be stuff that your partner is into that you think is cool or they're into it. And there'll be a smaller sliver of stuff where you're like, why do you listen to Weird Al Yankovic? You know?
Yeah.
Your wife might say to you.
Yeah. It's like, can we listen to pop country just sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you listen to Morgan Wallen alone, maybe, just not when I'm around?
That's right. We all have things where we're like, and if you have kids, there's even more things you won't be able to listen to in the car whenever you
want. That's true.
You know? Yeah, at some point in their lives, my kids will realize how much rap I listen to. Because I don't listen to it in front of them. Yeah. I think it's fine to not have a 100% hit rate of compatibility, particularly around like media consumption and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's definitely a threshold. There's a threshold at which it's like we're going to spend more time disagreeing about, you know, what movie to go to or what concert to go and see.
Yeah, and you can disagree about Bunta Vista because we're just not for everyone, you know.
It's also extremely inconsequential. You know, would say it really, it don't matter. None of what we're making matters.
No, you know? Not at all.
We're just content creators. We're just here to create content.
No, don't say that. Please don't call us content creators.
We just want stuff coming out of the pipe. We're making pink slime.
You know? Yeah.
Making boutique pink slime. so that's the first question. Second question, serious-ish. My 24 female boyfriend, 23 non-binary, met on one of the apps. And I'm weirdly self-conscious about it. I know it's apparently pretty common for couples our age to have met this way, and I wouldn't judge anyone else for it, but I can't help but feel like there's something wrong or shameful there. Even though we've had some good conversations about it, it's still a difficult feeling for me to shake. Any advice for feeling a bit less, I don't know, Puritan about this? Thanks for reading. Love the show.
That's a funny one because, like, it is so common. Like, it's so common. But if I'm being honest, like, when my friends have met that way, I'd absolutely destroy them about it because it's really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this. I want to say in the space of the last couple of weeks, somebody asked Eleanor and I how we met, and our answer is always, oh, we met at a show and went home together, you know? But I feel like historically that has kind of held that space for us of like, oh, we went out and hooked up like a one night stand kind of thing. Like we met each other and went home and
slept together now, several like, hours later. So organic. That's crazy. No one meets that way anymore.
Yeah. Oh. Well, so, but in the context of today's dating and how people meet each other, I think now when you tell that story, like if you told that story to the average Twitter user and you were like, I was out in a city seeing a cool electronic music producer and then I saw a person that I knew and they introduced me to one of their friends. And I started talking to this girl and we hit it off and we went home together. That sounds a lot better than like matching on an app, right?
Yeah. But it's the truth, right?
Well, yeah, except all I'm saying is that like back when we met, which was most of 15 years ago now, back when we met, that's what like meeting on the apps was like. Like just a casual hookup kind of thing.
Right, right. It was like a embarrassing. Yeah,
I feel like that occupied the same cultural space in terms of feeling a bit embarrassed about saying, how'd you meet? Oh, we just kind of hooked up.
Yeah, totally.
So, like, yeah, and I feel like that's what I think that's where the sort of friction is with that aspect of the apps is that, like, all the other sort of stuff you're saying, there was some existing social interaction happening, or like we met and interacted with each other and like something came out of it.
Yeah.
As opposed to what used to be like, oh, I was out at a nightclub and I went home with somebody, or I was out at a bar and I went home with somebody. That was like, that was the meat market easiest way to hook up with someone.
Yeah.
Thing that people used to do in that period of time.
Like, it could be worse too. Like, I met my ex-husband and my current partner on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which, if you have to explain that to someone who doesn't use Twitter, is one of the most painful conversations you'll ever have in your life. Like,
you don't want
to. How do you meet on Twitter? It's like, I don't know how to explain to you how, like, the ecosystem works. It's like everyone on there is like has hooked up with each other, you know? Like, I don't want to have to explain like liking somebody's tweets to like a stranger, you know? I would probably rather say, oh, we met on Tinder, you know?
Although I did say to this younger friend that we were talking to the other night, I did say to her that, like, I think she was talking about being on the apps and stuff and how she's going to meet this guy. She's been talking to him for a bit and he's funny, you know? Mm. And I said, like, yeah, I've met people off of Twitter, like yourself and Ben and Theo, and and I've met a bunch of other people that I've, like, you know, had meals with and made friends with and all that sort of stuff. And the qualifying thing for me has always been, like, do I think they're funny? Do I think their jokes are funny? Because in my opinion, it's one of the hardest aspects of a personality to fake.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult to fake being funny. It's difficult to fake having a compatible sense of humor with someone.
That's true.
Whereas, like, you know, you can fake being an ally, or, like, there's a lot of stuff people can just sort of go, I've memorized all the right terms, you know, I've got the playbook down, kind of thing. I've figured out the rules of this scene.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas I think that just being funny, you either are or you aren't, you know? And maybe by extension, it's also, I guess, like, illustrative of some baseline of emotional intelligence too.
Wow.
To understand makes something funny.
It's true.
And so of like all the people that I've met from online going off of that criteria, I've been very, very rarely been like disappointed or found myself going like, oh, wish I wasn't in this room with this person, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't think I've ever sort of caused that situation. So,
no. I'm impressed by people that meet on the apps, though, because every time I've used them, it's just been such a bleak experience. Like,
how do you think it feels for the guys who never get matched with, Lucy?
Sorry? Yeah, yeah.
Keep swiping, fellas. I never have. Inshallah, I never will. But I'm just always
unpleasant.
Well, I'm just fascinated to talk to people who are like 25, 30 years old, you know? Because I feel like everybody describes the cycle of using them, getting depressed about them, deleting them all, reinstalling them a week or two later.
Yeah, because it's just such a bad way to get to know someone. It's just the same as just, I don't know, it's just not in person, but you're trying to have small talk with this person that you've never met.
Yeah, and you want to get like some idea about whether or not someone's a psycho or whatever. But again, like, I think you can see those patterns of people who have sort of gone, oh, I've got my playbook.
Yeah.
I've got my set approach that I do.
But you guys did it. These people did it, you know?
You did it.
It's impressive.
like a follow-up on this, I'd like to know what it was that made you go, I'll give it a go.
Yeah. How'd you manage that?
Because, again, is it like you're having a chat to someone and you're like, oh, they're pretty funny?
Yeah. Surely. Anyway, the gist of my answer is it could be worse. It could be more embarrassing.
You could have married someone from Twitter.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it's so fucking normal now.
That's true. It's so normal. I think like, you don't surely, have to feel that. I actually don't know how else young people meet, right?
Yeah.
I guess you meet at the Lil Xanny show. do you meet at the
crypto conference?
Are they into crypto? Do you meet at the vape shop?
Yeah. Are you both holding a bored ape?
I don't think the young people are buying apes. It feels like millennial behavior.
Yeah. No, I think, I know it was an extremely long-winded answer from me, but I think that saying that you met on the apps now is just the equivalent of saying we met in a bar.
Yeah.
We met in a nightclub. We met at a gig. You know,
it was normal. We're normal.
It is simply what is the current generation's most convenient way of attempting to arrange a meetup / hookup with someone.
You're right.
I guess. And everybody knows what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
Should we take one more?
Let's take one more.
One more.
One more.
Ooh. Ooh. All right. This is from the Patreon. From Boo Boo. Dumbest obsolete mode of transit, i.e. horse and buggy, blimp, etc. I think blimps are pretty stupid just for the size of the craft versus how many people you're carrying.
Yeah, blimp is stupid. And just fundamental, if someone told me that idea, I would say that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard. That's so stupid.
We have discussed at length our disdain for the hot air balloon.
Yeah.
You know?
Also stupid.
Hey, nice balloon that kid's got. What if it was way bigger and I was tied to it up in the sky?
Yeah. No. What if you could just pop it and you would just fall out? You know?
Horse and buggy. Look, it makes sense. You know?
It makes sense. What else are we going to do? I actually just think the horse in general, I don't understand how we built a society around the horse, which is just one of the stupidest animals.
Right, like horses, camels.
Skittish.
Donkeys.
I don't know if horses back then were different. They mustn't have been as skittish as they are now. Because it's just not a smart guy, a horse, you know?
I guess that, but they're meant to be trainable, right?
I guess so. I wouldn't be taking one of those to war, personally.
Also, I guess is a horse the kind of less lethal, strong animal that you can try and get to do something? Because, you know, there's other animals that would be capable of pulling something large. But, if they get mad at you, it's kind of all over.
Yeah. Know? Whereas a horse doesn't really try to hurt you. It's just going to accidentally trample you to death. Yeah.
Or it might be get off, you know?
Ooh, yeah, and then you
in
die.
In which case, you know, all the damage is happening as you are ejected from the vehicle. But it's not going to be time to finish the job.
Yeah, totally.
I'm going to pull your face off or anything.
Yeah, it's blimp or horse. It's blimp or horse for me.
Okay. Bonus question from my girlfriend. Nice humble brag there.
Yeah, all right. We've all got stuff going on.
How do you feel about cruises? I think you need to do what any proper podcast listener would do and make your girlfriend listen to the podcast where we've talked about all those cruises.
I'm becoming cruise curious, you know?
I think Eleanor.
We've talked about them so much.
Eleanor has expressed some cruise curiosity. I think particularly because it's been so long since the only international flying that either of us have done in 10 years is Fiji and Thailand and stuff. Mm. Sort of 9 hours or less kind of things.
Whereas you can go places on a cruise. You're becoming cruise curious.
Well, her whole thing is like, I don't ever want to fly to Europe again.
Mm.
You know? She was like, it's just so goddamn long. I don't want to fly to Europe. And she was like,
unpleasant.
She was like, you could get a cruise and then you also get to see these places and stop off and stuff. And
they I was got
like,
a kids club. You can ditch the kids in there.
And I was like, fair enough, but also how much time are we putting on the front and back to like get to the place in the boat?
That's true.
You know? Like, surely there's no
And are we swingers now?
Surely there isn't a cruise leaving from Australia and going to Europe, right?
Oh, I don't know.
How's it work? Do you only sort of get cruises maybe. In Europe? Like, because I know
there's probably some to North America.
I know they do like American cruises where they like go to the Caribbean and stuff and yeah. I'll hop around, but that's like way
Europe seems a bit far.
Closer from America.
Surely you're flying somewhere and getting on that cruise, right?
In which case, you've kind of nullified the whole.
Yeah.
At least I don't have to fly to Europe thing. Maybe we don't know enough about cruises.
Maybe we don't.
Look, I've expressed a few things before on this show. Ben is not supportive of my dreams, I'm going to say, while he's not here and he's on holiday and he can't do anything about
it. He's not even going to hear this because I doubt he's going to want to listen to the podcast while he's on holiday.
He's not even going to hear it unless you yell at him about this. I have posited before that I think we could fundraise to send ourselves to something really fucking stupid.
Yeah, really dumb. Like just the worst Australian cruise.
Either the four of us sent on a cruise to see if we get like listeria or whatever.
Yeah.
And like we could record so many episodes on a cruise ship.
We could. That's
That'd be
true.
Very funny.
Be very funny.
The other thing that I was interested in crowdfunding for was to go to report from and participate in the English worm grunting competition.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, I would very much like to do either of those things. If you're supportive of that, let us know or yell at Ben to let me follow my dreams.
Yes.
And I believe that is an episode of Godfuckers.
It is.
I'm just thinking about Walton Goggins and that wig now.
Yeah, I'm going to think about that. You should all think about that.
Those big titties.
Yep.
And that coquettish smile.
You know? Yeah, he does have a coquettish smile.
Walton Goggins can be very cheeky.
He can be.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for writing your questions. Feel free to throw any other suggestions to us for movies. We did get a suggestion in here. We did get a suggestion about a movie called Turbulence 3 Heavy Metal.
That sounds so great.
From 2001 about a famous band doing a live streamed show on a jet while it's flying.
That sounds so
good. With a bunch
good.
Of fans. And also there's a hacker. Rutger Hauer is the
Rutger
pilot.
Rutger Hauer. Oh my God. All right. Let's go. Let's do that next time.
All right. But yes, we do like the suggestions. It's been a while since we watched a silly movie for the show. You know, been many years.
It has been.
There's always room for one more. Well, see you on the free episode.
Bye.
I'm already up when the rooster crows. Get my coffee black, breakfast in a sack, 'cause I gotta roll. Another whole home day, and it ain't a lot, but it's my lot in life. There's better ways, but I gotta get paid, so I'm off to toe the line. 24/7, 365, I'm a lineman. Most men I know wouldn't touch the pole, I'm a climber. Hell, rain or shine, I'm on call. Day or night, there ain't a job too small. I got the power to turn you on if it's a problem. Yeah, that's my job, I'm a lineman. Now, Miss Kelly Watts,
my next in line. She's got a pipeful urge, the kind of surge that leads to overtime. It's been a long, hard day at the top of a pole, but I need to make this call. She's the kind of date that just won't wait. Boys, I don't mind at all. 24-7, 365, I'm a lineman. Most men I know wouldn't touch the pole. I'm a climber. The hell ain't no shine. I'm on call day or night. There ain't a job too small. I got the power to turn you on if it's a problem. Yeah, that's my job. I'm a lineman. Seven, 365, I'm a lineman. Most men I know wouldn't touch the pole. I'm a climber. The hell ain't no shine. I'm on call day or night. There ain't a job too small. I've got the power to turn you on if that's your problem.